Have you heard about the tiny bakery in Sydney that's supposedly selling cinnamon scrolls that are to die for? There's one problem. Every weekend, there's a line of people that stretches down the road and around the corner. And I need you to know something about me. I don't queue for basically anything. Are cinnamon scrolls, any cinnamon scrolls, worth a 1 hour wait? If you're asking me, probably not. Yet people still do it. So does the act of queuing for hours to buy something increase the thrill when you finally get it? Or does it mean you're destined for disappointment? Well, with me is Dr. Paul Harrison, a senior lecturer in marketing at Deakin Business School. He joins me for our regular buyer beware chat. Paul, are you a queuer?
Yes, I am.
Oh.
And I think, I mean, you are a queuer, Tegan, but maybe
voluntarily. Yes, not by choice, for sure.
Exactly. Because I was thinking, as we were talking about, we queue for security at the airport, we queue in all sorts of ways, but I do voluntarily queue. And I think it's part of my, I don't know, behavioural anxiety in that I like to get good things. And I think one of the things is that queuing is one of these elements where, when you're in a queue, the uncertainty is removed away from you into, I guess, a form of extrinsic reality. I mean, I've queued for things like, you know, this is, I don't want to sound like a, you know, person who travels too much, but, you know, a croissant in Paris or I did queue for tickets for the BBC proms 1 year.
Okay.
And the Mala Festival that I went to, again, I queued 2 years in advance for tickets. So it's partly about what's important to people, but there is a lot more going on in terms of the psychology of queuing than purely just lining up and saying, I'll just wait to get what I need.
I think, so you mentioned security lines at the airport. Yes, definitely that's a thing that we all have to queue for if we travel. I feel like queuing is less of a thing, it's less of part of our lives these days than it used to be, at least physically standing in line. Back in the day, if you wanted to see your favourite band in concert, you might have gone and slept out overnight in front of the ticket office to you know, get your ticket, whereas now we just curse the website as it fails to load and tells you that you're like 8,000th in the queue. Do you think there's something about the fact that queuing isn't as much of a part of our lives now that makes things like queuing for a croissant more of a novelty?
I think part of it is the performance. I mean, we all know that life is a series of performances. Now, some of us post it on social media, but other people actually like the collective experience of queuing, because I think that's the other thing, is that we forget that there are less opportunities for us to be social. And one of the really, I guess, human elements, the psychological elements of queuing, is that when you're in a queue with other people, there's a kind of, I guess, a collective effervescence, this idea that you're kind of joined together in this thing. And again, people use it as a form of self-justification as well. Like, now that I'm here and I'm waiting, it must be worth it. If all of these people are here, it must be worth it. Somebody's done the due diligence. We're all lining up for this amazing cinnamon bun or something like that. So it must be good. And again, that removes some of that, I guess, that risk. We put trust in the crowd. And these are opportunities that we have less of because we spend so much time online. I mean, we know at a kind of, I guess, a basic level that we're in a queue, but that queue isn't human. It's an algorithm and it's pushing us through, where when you're with people, there is this sense of social connection and people are joining together in a bigger act.
I do love this idea of the kind of implied due diligence, that if the queue is there, then value is implied. Does it affect our perception of the final product when we finally get to the beginning of the queue, if we sort of feel like we've earned it?
Yeah, it does. And there's quite a lot of research that's kind of looked at that, is that actually queuing, actually forcing ourselves to wait for something, actually then leads us to feel what basically a sense of high utility of that. And it's because it's delayed satisfaction in a way. So what we do is that we get into this crowd, we see what's going on, we see what people are doing, we get excited by it, we join in amongst the camaraderie that's going on in the queue. And then what we do is that we kind of feel like a sense of achievement. It's like the IKEA effect. That's an actual psychological effect.
What?
Which is, it feels like we've put effort into something and we're getting what we need, and therefore we actually feel a higher level of connection to the thing that we've queued for.
It's the IKEA effect. Like, if I've wielded an Allen key, I'm more happy with my furniture. Okay.
Yes. And if also, you know, you've had a fight or something like that, because there's been an emotional kind of response to that. IKEA, I don't know whether they engineered it that way, but they've kind of created this idea and it's built around this idea of if we put a bit of effort into something, we tend to have a higher level of ownership. There's a theory called prospect theory, which basically tells us the more effort we put into something, the more we feel connected to it, the more we're kind of or the less willing we are to give it up. And that's, queuing is an example of that. Traveling to stand in a queue, wait an hour for a cinnamon bun. You know, ultimately the cinnamon bun is just, you know, a few ingredients put together, but it is that kind of idea of, look at all the work I've put in trying to get this.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Dr. Paul Harrison. He's a consumer behaviour expert who joins me fortnightly for our segment that we call Buyer Beware. Today we are talking about queuing, especially for viral things. Bettina says, I queue for tickets to anything dark mofo related. Its events are always unforgettable and brilliant, totally worth it. Plus their system is great. You know where you are in the queue at all times. Another says, I have just returned from Japan and they are the queuing capital of the world. Very disciplined and polite. Paul, what are the sort of logistics of a queue? How can you make a queuing experience a good one if you are the vendor?
Yeah, I think part of it is helping exactly what the what your texter just said about actually letting you know what's going on. So a queue itself can be unsettling because you don't know where you stand in the queue. So constantly updating people about how long the queue is, how long it will take them to get where they need to. Probably one of my best security experiences I've ever had was in Amsterdam, where it had technology, and even if this technology wasn't telling the truth, it made me feel like I was safe. So it would tell me how long I had to wait, which was the fastest moving queue. It would direct me towards it. So it wasn't a person guessing, you know, this queue is going fast. It was using, you know, in inverted commas, technology. I think Disney have done a really good job of that at their theme parks. One of the things that they do is that they basically use very clear signage. They have visible progress. They reframe the waiting as anticipation. So they have music and people performing, engaging people, transforming that delay into, I guess, a prelude to the actual full experience. So rather than making queuing, I guess, a bad experience, making it part of the experience is a really clever way to remove that anxiety and that stress that people get from queuing.
Is there a difference in the experience of queuing for something fun, like a cinnamon scroll, or queuing for something like there aren't enough checkout operators at the supermarket?
Yes, there is. And again, I guess there's a degree of sitting underneath that, which is how critical it is to this person's kind of what the person is trying to buy or they're trying to do. So I think one of the things is that if we feel, again, you can still control that, and all emotion and all responses have different levels of valence, I guess. But one of the ways to think about that is that if ultimately there's going to be a queue, and we're kind of, you know, probably talking about something like a supermarket, if people can still see that there's some sense of order, that there is, you know, a form of procedural justice, people are going to find that more positive or certainly see it as something contributing to a better experience than if it just all feels ad hoc and random and then they suddenly change the way that it's set up. We have this kind of element of our kind of human reasoning, which is bounded rationality. We really don't have the ability to look at all complex decisions. So what we do is that we look to others to help us to kind of manage that. If they also look like they're out of control and they have no idea what they're doing, it does have a much more negative effect. I'm always surprised, you know, with these supermarkets, how much effort and research they put into the design of the actual supermarket itself, but hardly anything into the way that they do queuing. And that can have a huge impact on people's satisfaction.
Paul, thanks so much for joining me. Dr. Paul Harrison is a senior lecturer in marketing at Deakin Business School. And I was hoping one of these texts would come through. Matt says, my wife and I met in a queue. She pushed in front of me in a line for fish and chips. It was a very long queue ahead of us, so I decided to have a chat instead of asking her to move to the back. Clearly, the rest is history here. Another says, what about queuing for the ladies' toilets? Many a problem has been solved in those queues. Well, that's true.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.